Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 225, recorded October 27th, 2014.
Howdy, everyone.
Hello again.
Welcome to Aquarimax.
You should say that in like a creepy Vincent Price voice for this week.
Welcome to Aquarimax.
Oh, you know what? I forgot that I already said something like that because I've added the intro again. And so, they'll already hear it.
Okay, well, that's you're okay. Doubly welcome.
But I could make my voice creepy.
You gotta do a Halloween one, though.
Okay, watch this. I'm gonna do it. Welcome to Aquarimax!
Now you have to put in the maniacal laugh. There you go. If you live someplace where you don't celebrate Halloween, you can just have the normal welcome to Aquarimax.
Okay. See, I'm going to go in post-production and make that voice sound all creepy.
Are you going to put like an echo on it?
Yeah, maybe. Sweet. If I remember. If I don't remember, sorry. Then I didn't do it.
If he doesn't remember, add the echo in your head.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyway.
What do we got today?
We have a pretty cool lineup today because we have three Google voice messages.
Neato.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. Plus, two people who wrote in.
Okay, so we have... voice messages from Tony in New York and Mike in Oregon and Ryan in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then we also have an email from Tony and an email from Linda in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. So we've got some new people and we've got some regulars and it's pretty exciting. Three Google voice messages. I think we've done that before, but it's not common. But I'm not complaining. I'm excited. So we're going to try something new where most of the time what we do is we listen to the Google voice messages right before we record, and then I add them in digitally, and it's a pain.
Like edit them in.
Yeah, it's kind of a pain, actually. So I'm going to try something new where we're going to listen to the messages live.
Well, like, they're not, well, not calling live. But
I mean, we're going to listen to them in real time.
We're going to play them on a little speaker.
Yeah, we're going to try it, see how it goes. So if it sounds really awful, let us know. Any worse than it normally does, you know, with the messages, because they're not as good quality as this microphone, but... that's fine. We're perfectly happy with it. But if you can hear this fine and it sounds okay, then let us know. And if you really can't and it sounds awful, let us know. Okay? We'll work it out. So first, let's go to Tony in New York. Yeah, let's do it. Here we go.
Oh, now you got to look it up.
Oh, no, it's fast. I could do it so fast. Watch this, how fast I am.
How fast are you?
Pretty fast. I would be a little bit faster except somebody's like... putting me under pressure right now.
Nobody's putting... I don't know what you're talking about.
It's all that music. Okay, now here we go. Let's try it. Ready?
Hello, Aquarimax. It's Tony from New York calling. Hey, Kelly, I wanted to congratulate you on your new crested gecko. You guys have a lot of interesting herb stories to tell. I wondered, you know, hey, here's the thing. I think it'd be okay. You know, I think it'd be okay if you did your own corner on the show. Because, you know, hey, reptiles live in aquariums, and they like water. At least they like drinking water, right? So, hey, that's awesome for an aquarium podcast. Also, it's called Aquarimax, not, you know, Fishamax. So I think you could squeak under the bar on that, too. Anyway, congrats. I hope to hear another gecko story soon. I'll talk to you later. From New York, signing off.
I love this message.
You should tell them the story.
Okay. The first time that, you know, the day that we actually got the message and we listened to it, I was not having a good day. I was a sad Kelly instead of a silly bouncy Kelly, and the universe doesn't like that very much, right?
Right.
Right. So Russ played me Tony's message and I laughed my face off. And it made me feel better.
It did. It was. It was.
Because I just loved the. They like water, drinking water, right?
And Fishamax. You laughed your head off at that one too.
It's Aquarimax, not Fishamax.
So it was. It was a well-timed message.
So Tony, you cheered me up that day. So thank you.
Yep, well-timed message and a good point too.
Yes.
And I think another good point is that a lot of our listeners are not just aquarium keepers. We know that a number of them are also herpetoculturists.
It's true. So when we have little news and tidbits about the geckos, we will share them.
Yeah. And it's true that she lives in an aquarium.
She does. It's a glass-sided tank. Yeah. So which would hold water if we put water in it.
Yep. Yeah. And she's doing well. You want to give him a little update since we're talking about it?
I think she's growing.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like you said, she's just a little bit more robust.
Yeah, and she loves active, to come out and exercise.
Pull her out, and she does the, you know, the stair-stepping from one hand to the other for several minutes, kind of like, ooh, I'm getting my daily constitutional. And then she settles down and more just kind of sits there, and she'll eat a little bit out of my hand, and mm-hmm. she likes to jump up on my shoulder.
She ate a bug out of your hand or my hand, one of our hands,
the other day. I think it was your hand.
Yeah?
Yeah, she did.
That was fun.
It was neat. She gave it that predator look, like, I noticed you, and now I'm going to eat you.
She zipped down and grabbed it. It was a flower beetle larva?
Yep.
Like a tiny mealworm,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. So, it was fun. So maybe we will, you know, when we have some fun news. I think Tony's rationale is pretty much rock solid. We can't go against
that. It's awesome.
So.
It's not Fishamax.
Exactly. Lots of creatures that live in aquariums and drink or otherwise enjoy the benefits of water.
H2O is good for everybody.
Okay. So.
So thank you, Tony.
Thank you indeed. Now we're going to go to Mike in Oregon's message.
Okie dokie.
Hey, Aquaramax, it's Mike from Oregon again. Hey, I just listened to you guys' last podcast you posted, and you guys were talking about my 20-gallon that cycled within 48 hours. Yeah, a little more detail on that. First of all, the filter pad that I used was from my Rina Filstar canister filter, and it was the first stage filter. So it's the first filter that that the water, you know, comes into contact with as it goes through the filter. So it's... Anyway, I chose that one, assuming, because it would be exposed to the most oxygenated water, so I assumed it probably had the most bacteria. Because it's a canister filter, the filter is the pad is a very large pad, so, yeah, I'm sure you're right, Russ, that because of the, it's, you know, of the pads, you know, sheer size, that definitely probably explains the ammonia and nitrite going down so quickly. As far as the nitrates are concerned, actually, one thing to say, they don't really openly advertise that the Wonder Safe rocks will actually reduce nitrates, but the guys on Petfish Talk actually talked about that, and it's kind of one of those things that's it's not advertised by the company, but it is effective in the... The stone is very porous. It's somewhere, I would say, somewhere between a lava rock and a pumice stone as far as the texture, if you were to rub your hand on it. It's anyway, so that would be my best guess as to how it's getting the nitrate down so quickly. You know, there's those bacteria that are in there. And I put that WonderSafe rock right on my air stone because it says on the box to keep it in a very highly oxygenated area. I don't know, that's why I did it, and it sure worked. So, anyway, that's the details as far as what happened with the little 20-gallon tank. So, anyway, talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right, well, thank you, Mike, for the additional detail on your setup and about the 48-hour cycling. And that does make sense. Mm-hmm. Sounds like that filter pad probably did contribute heavily, and it's a good point that he brings up, because I recall listening to the Pet Fish Talk episodes where they talked about WonderSave. There was a special episode in which they interviewed a spokesperson from the company.
And what did they say?
And as I recall, she did say, you know, they don't officially
advertise
that they have bacteria that can handle the nitrates and turn them in, you know, outgas that and get rid of it. But that they have had anecdotal reports that that happens.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that's a good point. So, thank you, Mike. That's good information. And I'm glad it worked for you. It would be nice if we could all get our tanks cycled that fast. And one mm-hmm. way to do it is to use that, you know, that big pad. And I think it's especially, as Mike said, when you use a canister filter, the first filtration pads that the water touches are going to be the ones with the most oxygen. In a filter like a BioWheel filter, for example, the BioWheel is going to have a lot of oxygen because it's constantly being exposed to the air. And it's the last stage of the filter. But in something like a canister filter, where it's a big tube coming out of your tank and going into a a canister that's mm-hmm. essentially closed, that first part is where the oxygen is, and it becomes more limited as it goes through the system. So that does make a lot of sense for it to be the first one and use the first one. All right. Any other comments or questions on that?
Not for me.
Okay. Well, let's move on to our next one. And this one is Ryan from Kentucky.
Now, have we heard from Ryan before?
I'm trying to think if we have. We've heard from Ryan's before, and I'm just not sure if we've heard from Ryan in Kentucky before or not. If we have, it's been a while. Mm-hmm. So either way, either welcome
or welcome back.
One or the other. So here we go.
Hey, you guys. This is Ryan from Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, I was going to ask you a question about do-it-yourself aquarium backgrounds. I made one out of, watching a YouTube video out of styrofoam with using a GE Silicone 1, which is supposedly aquarium safe. It doesn't say it on the box, but from what I've read, it's aquarium safe. And concrete hydraulic cement, which is another thing I heard off of YouTube from a guy that has had an established tank up for over a year. Using this exact same stuff. And he said that it just raises your pH, and you got to drain it and fill it again, drain it and fill it again. My question was, have you ever done anything like this? And what's your recommendations, and do you think it's okay to do this? Building it in a 75-gallon, it looks beautiful, all black rock, looks like slate rock laid on top of each other with lots of caves. Just curious. Thank you, guys.
Bye. Okay, well, thank you, Ryan. And this is a fascinating area for me. I've been interested in doing something like this for a long time. I haven't really done this sort of background, though.
At least not aquatically.
Well, I've done...
You build the background for the gecko tank.
Right, that's some different materials.
Right.
Because Ryan was using styrofoam as the background.
And then the styrofoam, do you kind of like... cut it and
mm-hmm.
shape it how you want it, yeah. and then put the other stuff on it?
Right. And I've heard of various compounds being used to cover the styrofoam. Quite a few different ones, but one of the ones, like he said, is you can use cement. I've heard of people using, I believe, grouting compound and various things. Quikrete is one that I've heard.
The one that he said, isn't it?
He said
the message is kind of blipped over.
Crete hydraulic cement, and he may have said Quikrete because it did sound like the message kind of blipped. And there are various formulations and things that people use, but they look amazing because I have explored some of these YouTube videos myself
mm-hmm.
With the intent of doing something like that. I am really, really fascinated with the whole idea of doing these backgrounds, partly because when you build one out of styrofoam, it's a lot cheaper than getting the rock.
Right.
And it's a lot lighter
weight.
It's a lot lighter weight. And you can customize it so much. And if you have all those caves in there, you can put like Mbuna cichlids, things like that in. And they're comfortable in there. It's more like...
there's plenty of caves and plenty of hiding spots and territories.
Right, but you don't have to worry about lifting all those rocks or, mm-hmm. The rocks falling down and bashing into the bottom glass and breaking things.
Right.
There are so many benefits to building them beyond just the weight. There's that idea of, the security of not having anything fall and the cost. And the fact that the sky's the limit in terms of what you can imagine almost, you can
make
build
it look
so
like
many
the
different
Empire
things.
State Building.
And
well, all the Mbunas can live in the little apartments.
You could. I imagine you could. I don't know that I would want to do it like that.
I don't know that I would either, but some people like to do specialty theme tanks.
And I have built, I have a background over here in this vivarium that shares some things in common with that type of background. It's built out of great stuff foam, and I've heard of people using great stuff foam in aquariums too. And then covered that with Gorilla Glue, and then covered that with cocoa fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And I still want to do that with an aquarium. I've talked about this probably before, that someday I won't do it on our house because Kelly doesn't like this kind of fish. But someday I want to get a whole bunch of blind cave cichlids. I just said blind cave cichlids. Oh, no. I meant to say blind cave fish, blind cave tetras, something like that. Those are two common names used. So, sorry, I don't know where cichlids came from, folks.
It's because we were just talking about them.
Maybe because we were talking about Mbunas, but yeah. I wanted to get some blind cave tetras and put a background that looks like a cave with stalactites and stalagmites, you know, and everything. And then put like a moonlight over it, so it just barely kind of a blue glow, and have that like in a corner somewhere, so it would look really cool.
The nightlight?
Yeah, kind of like a nightlight.
The creepy fish?
Yeah, I think that would be kind of fun.
That reminds me, I'm going to go on a slight tangent, because I wanted to ask you about it, and it reminded me, and if I don't do it now, I'll forget. Isaac, that's our oldest, was saying something about blind angel? Angel blind cave fish? They were angel fish, but they were like blind. He said they looked really pretty. I don't know. Is there anything you know something about that? Is he just thinking that? I don't know where he got it from. So
I don't know. I'd be interested in talking to him about that. I have heard of various different species of blind cave fish. There aren't just blind cave tetras, and apparently among blind cave tetras, there are a couple of different populations that apparently exist. They are genetically distinct from each other. They arose independently. And that there are other various species of fish that are not the same as the blind cave tetras that have also, you know, become blind over millennia in the caves. So, I would like to see what he's talking about. I haven't heard of blind angelfish in caves, so I would...
He said they weren't pink.
They weren't pink. Interesting. I'll have to talk to him about that. See what he's talking about. So, essentially... Ryan, this is really cool. I'm glad you're doing it, and I hope to hear more about it. I hope to try it myself sometime. Any Aquariumaxers out there who have built one and would like to share, including you, Ryan, if you want to share, you know, a video or some photos of your setup, that'd be great. We'd love to see that. And anyone else who has done it, any pros or cons? I don't really see a danger with it. In terms of the materials you're using, I mean, I do see the fact that the pH rises as a potential problem, but the method that you described of just, you know, leaching the materials out by changing the water over and over again is a sound method.
Essentially, I do it with other things.
Yeah, it's the same thing we do with, like,
various driftwood, kinds of driftwood,
high tannin content driftwood. It's the opposite. It lowers the pH, and we leach out a lot of the tannins, and then we don't have to worry about it anymore. So I think the principle's sound. And, and there are, you know, various materials you can use, and some of them probably affect the pH more or less than others. But I think enough people are doing it that it's kind of the proof is in the pudding. I sometimes worry about the different types of silicone adhesives, because there are different formulations, and some of them are actually, you know, potentially more harmful than others. Some of them contain just acetic acid, which is what the aquarium ones tend to contain, acetic acid that, you know, outgasses, essentially. And then it's safe for fish once it's done that. But some of them contain methanol. And acetic acid can be an irritant and so on. It's not, you know, something you enjoy smelling. It's basically it's the same acid in vinegar, but it can be quite strong. But methanol is more dangerous. It's an alcohol, but I used to use it in one of the places I worked, and you have to be careful not to get it on your skin because it can cause permanent nerve damage in large quantities. And so I'm a little leery of using it. And, you know, generally when you use it, you'll be wearing gloves to help protect you. But the different formulations can be scary for those reasons, in terms of the what they're using that cures as it outgasses. And then there are, apparently in some forms of it, there are mold retardants and things that can be bad for the fish long after it's cured. But apparently this one seems to be safe. GE silicone is one that I've heard, both one and two, I've heard people using in different animal-related
contexts,
but I don't know. You know, I've puzzled about that myself, which one is better. I don't know. But it seems like it's working. And in the case that you have found on the YouTube video. All right, please share with us, everyone, if you have something that you can add to the discussion about do-it-yourself backgrounds. Love to hear about it. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
So I think that's all of the voice messages, right?
For today, yep. Okay. It is. But we have two emails.
Okay. One of which is from Tony. And you, of course, you guys all, of course, remember that Russ has his ebook out, the Queer Max's Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods.
Oh, you know what?
What?
Let's play the thingy.
What thingy?
Should we play the thingy? The little thing in the middle? This would be a good time.
Oh, I forgot. We have the thing in the middle now.
Huh? Yeah, we do. We have it back, so let's play it right now.
You get to hear the thing in the middle. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. That was a pretty awesome thing in the middle.
Yeah, you're the one who did it.
Oh.
Don't you remember?
No.
You're the one who recorded
okay,
it.
Okay, maybe it's not so awesome then.
No, I was saying that's why it was awesome, because you did it.
Okay. Okay, so we have Tony in New York an email. Mm-hmm. He says, at the local newsstand, I couldn't help but notice that this month's issue of Tropical Fish Hobbyist featured an article on 5 Easy Live Foods, and he sent a link to it. Mm-hmm. Upon seeing this, I realized that they must have many avid Aquarimax listeners amongst their staff, and have probably decided to take the lead from the number one aquarium podcast in the world today, which I think is very forward-thinking. My comments. I think that it would be very proactive for Tropical Fish Hobbyist Magazine to bring Aquarimax on board in a paid capacity, with Aquarimax's 200-plus episode resume and dedicated fan base. An investment like that just makes good business sense. Of course, as good an article as it was, I would also like to point out that the Aquarimax Guide to Easy Life Foods features 7 options and costs less than an issue of Tropical Fish Hobbyist. Still a must-have for all interested aquarists and still on the cutting edge of the aquarium hobby. Make mine Aquarimax. Regards from Tony in New York.
Thank you, Tony.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was well said. What can I
and
say?
They should hire you. You could just do like a monthly column.
Oh, that would be fun. That'd be awesome. I'd be all for that.
Yeah.
I've done several magazine bits before. Mm-hmm. And
we were counting the other day. We have like 7 articles published in the Aquarium Fish magazine.
Well, there are some in an Aquarium Fish magazine.
Oh, and some of them are in the one that comes out
once a year. And some are in Aquarium USA, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Their names are too similar. That's and okay.
I'm going to have some more coming out pretty soon. True. Yeah, that sounds fun. And thank you for remembering and bringing that up about our ebook.
Such a good deal.
Several people buy it.
Less than a magazine.
We're excited about that, and we hope people continue to buy it and continue to use it and learn from it. And we hope to write some more in the future.
Yes. And if there's, you know, Tropical Fish Hobbyist editors out there listening, you know who to call.
There you go.
Okay. Our last email for today is from Linda in Southern California. And she says, hello, I have been listening to your podcasts for some time now and always enjoy them.
Well, welcome, Linda.
Yes.
I think this is the first time Linda has contributed. Yeah, so welcome to the world of Aquarimax. As a contributor.
Yes. She says, I live in Southern California near the ocean. I have heard of aquariums being set up in basements, which causes me to wonder if one could be set up in a garage. Since I am not familiar with basements, I don't know if they are heated in winter. The coldest it might get where I live is 35 degrees, but that might be for only a week at most. Can an aquarium be set up in a garage?
Okay, well, let's look at that. The short answer is yes. It can be set up in a garage. One thing to think about is which type of fish you're putting there, of course. If you're going to put goldfish in there, you could just do it and you wouldn't have to worry a whole lot.
They wouldn't really need a heater.
You wouldn't really need a heater because if it's only going to get down to 35 and the water's not going to freeze, You just have to stop feeding your fish once the temperature dips below about 50, 55 degrees, right in there.
Do they kind Fahrenheit. Of hibernate-ish?
They do. Yep, they become torpid, and if they do eat at that temperature, it doesn't do them any good, and in fact can cause them serious issues because they can't properly digest it at those lower temperatures. So you just stop feeding them, and they don't really need the food. They can live off, you know, the stores of fat that they have because they're not doing a whole lot. Be fairly inactive. And down to 35 is not an issue for goldfish. I mean, I shouldn't say that. For outdoor type goldfish, it's not a problem if they...
Probably not fancy, you know, goldfish, huh?
Fancy goldfish might be a little trickier. To you know, might not do as well at that low temperature. But normal outside goldfish would be fine. There are some other fish that you could keep, too. I mean, if you're looking at... There are various native fish in the U.S. that could do fine at those temperatures. And there are some other fish that do fairly well at low temperatures, too, that people don't always think of.
Especially because if it's 35 outside, it's not necessarily 35 in the garage.
Right, the garage is likely to be warmer because, for example, here,
insulated.
We had a, I guess you'd call it sort of a basement garage in our
former place of residence. Around the walls or
kind
of dug into the hill.
It never got to freezing down there. It got quite close and it got cold, even though the outside was, you know, it would get to, how cold did it get?
Yeah.
Much colder than 35.
It's Utah. That's plenty cold.
Much colder than 35, but the garage never actually froze. So the fact that it's connected to the house does tend to keep it warmer. And the fact that it's just enclosed and that provides some insulation as well will make a difference. So it's very true that even if it does get to 35 outside, it may not get that cold in the garage. You might end up somewhere in the 40s when it gets down that cold. Some other things to think about, you could still heat it. You could heat whatever tank you have out there. You do have to be careful, though. You can kind of overtax a heater if it gets really cold. Now, if it's only going to dip to down to 35 for a couple of hours, the thermal latency of the water is going to be a protection, too. It takes a long time to cool water off. And it, just as it takes a lot of energy to warm water up. So if you are keeping the tank at a fairly warm temperature and the outside temperature dips for just a little while at 35, you like said it might be for only a week at most. Now, a week is going to be long enough that it's going to be an issue. But if it just for a couple of hours overnight dips down to 35 when it was previously in the mid-50s or 40s, and it just dips down, the water temperature might not dip that much. So there are some things there.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering... you know, usually people set up fish tanks because they want to look at them. So I'm wondering, mm-hmm. is your garage, Linda, someplace that you are spending a certain amount of time, like, working on other projects? Either, I don't know, as a workshop or, you know, do you spend a lot of time in the garage? Is the garage already heated? Is it attached to the house? Or is it a standalone garage?
Yeah, those are all good things to bring up, yeah.
Is the car actually going in there, or is the garage used for another purpose?
Those are great points bring up. And maybe this is going to be like a breeding project where it's a breeding tank. And
it's not a display tank.
You're only going to look at it for, you know, 20 minutes a day while you're mm-hmm. taking care of it or something. And that's fine. If, you know, it is important to think about that too.
I was just wondering if, I don't know, is the garage already attached to the house and have electricity and heat and everything?
Right. Or even if it doesn't have heat, is it insulated?
Right.
Those are great
things. Or is it a shed that you park the car in?
Yeah. Good things to think about. And what kind of fish, of course, has a lot to do with it. If you're going to try to keep discus out there and it gets down to 35, I mean, you'd have some issues with heating it. And not to mention the fact that if you have a tank that you're heating and the outside of the tank gets a lot cooler, you're going to have condensation all over the outside of the mm-hmm. tank, potentially causing some issues there.
So you probably wouldn't want it on a wooden stand.
Yeah, and then... So, yeah, any big gradient between the outside air and the water inside the tank could be, you know, could be an issue. So another thing to think about, too, is the insulation of the tank itself. If you imagine that you're going to have water, you know, that the temperature in the garage is going to be in the 60s, say, most of the time in the cool season when you're going to need to be heating it. And occasionally dipping down to 35, you might consider putting some styrofoam insulation on the maybe the bottom of the tank and the backs and the sides of the tank. And then when it gets really cold, put the insulation on the front and then put some insulation on top of the tank too. When you know it's getting that cold, you can cover it up and leave it like that.
Like what kind for a of little while. What would you use?
Well, I would say just put styrofoam sheets that maybe you can tape the ones that are on the back and the sides on there all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you still put a background and things on the inside of the tank so you don't see the styrofoam. But then when it gets really cold, you put it on the front.
Just do it all the way around.
Yeah, and then even just put a quilt or a blanket on top of it. Mm-hmm. That can help retain the heat if it's going to get cold for a short term. You know, you can't leave it there for very long.
A few hours overnight?
Yeah, but if you know it's going to get really cold for a short time, you could do that, and that would help make the heater not work too hard, because you can certainly destroy the heater and cause all sorts of problems if you expect a, you know, a couple hundred watts heater to keep a tank warm when it's 35, and like that could probably be an issue for various types of heaters. We've kept tanks in our basement, but
It was part of the house.
It was part of the house. It was heated, but it like was much cooler. You know, basements tend to be a little cooler than the rest of the house. And they tend to be, I guess you'd say, the temperature is mitigated all year. It's
not as hot in the summer.
Not as cold in the winter because you've got, if it's the kind of basement we had where it was surrounded by earth, most of it.
Right.
And that would tend to mitigate things. Anyway, you could set it up in the garage, but the more you have to heat it, the more you run into problems. And the longer you have to heat it for, the more you'd run into problems, potentially. But if you are keeping cool water species, you might not need to worry about it at all. And, you know, in Hawaii, people kept tanks just outside a lot. But
yeah, it didn't get down to 35.
The weather was a lot more mild in that case. Yeah, the lowest it ever got when we were out there was in the 50s, I think, once. Got into
overnight.
The high 50s Fahrenheit
and
overnight.
I remember because I woke up and thought, oh, I want to pull a blanket on and actually shut the window.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which was really rare. Usually the coolest it ever got was the 60s. So it's a different thing to think about. But I knew people who had tanks outside, just glass tanks right out the side, like on the side of their driveway or whatever, just set there, and they would change water by just sticking the hose in the top and letting it run over the sides and different things like that. And, I guess that's a different thing. It really doesn't apply because you don't have to worry about it getting as cold there. But, I've even heard of people, not that I've done this myself, but I've heard of people putting a tank up outside and then burying three sides of it in glass. And so, I mean, in the earth,
you know,
they kind of shore up the earth around the sides. And then in the front of the tank where you're looking into it. Yeah,
it's like a hobbit hole fish tank.
Kind of, yeah. But, I hope that answers the question. If you have, you know, some further questions about that to follow up on, like, what fish you were planning on keeping and how you were planning on heating it, if you were planning on heating it and so on, then we might be able to give you some more information. But hopefully that's a start.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Linda.
And I think that's everybody for tonight.
I think so. So, until next time.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.